Welcome back to the Open Source Startup Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Robbie from Cowboy Ventures, and joined, as always, by Tim Chan at Essence VC. And today we are super excited to have a really special guest on the podcast. We have Soren Matthias, who's co-founder and CEO of TerraMate, which is an infrastructure as code management platform that we will learn much more about. So welcome, Soren.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Awesome. So on this podcast, we like to start way back at the beginning. So why don't you tell us the founding story for TerraMate and where the idea came from?
Sure. So that goes way back. By education, and software and cloud engineer. And I've been working in mostly the European scale-up ecosystem for the past 15 years, right? So kind of in 2015, I met my now co-founder and genius CTO, Marius, while we were working at a German-based scale-up that was growing rather quickly. And they had all their operations running on-premises and on-premises data centers. And he was leading the platform team back then. I was leading the backend team. And we were given the task to basically migrate everything to AWS, right? So this is how I kind of got to know him. It was my first touch point with, at the scale. And I guess we just realized how cumbersome and inefficient the whole process was. Basically, lack of automation, solutions, and processes, but also people back then, to be honest. And we did that for quite some time. And, you know, after that migration, which took really a year plus, I basically went to lunch with Marius and asked him whether or not he would be, you know, willing to take a look at this and come up with some ideas on how to make this more efficient, which led us to found our previous company, Mineros, which was basically a solution service provider in the cloud and platform engineering space. So we did that for quite some years, built a company, was growing rather quick, bootstrap company out of Berlin, good fun, mostly around productized services. But then we quickly realized that our own engineers would spend too much time writing and maintaining infrastructure code, right? And that even though technologies exist in, you know, various forms, we didn't really feel that the existing solutions were efficient enough for us. So that has led us to inventing TerraMate.
Awesome. So I think TerraMate, the project, if I can understand, right, you talked a lot about like, it's not actually IaC itself, right? Is actually helping to manage and help people to orchestrate it. And I think this idea of product on top of IaC is probably still quite new. Can you talk about like why people need to adopt this? And at what point is the right point to adopt this as well? And what is the like the biggest benefits for people to use a product like TerraMate?
Yeah, sure. So what TerraMate does is, TerraMate is an orchestrator and code generator. At the moment, we mainly market it with a focus on Terraform, although as of today, you can already use it for various IaC tools, CloudFormation, Pulumni, Kubernetes, you name it, right? The reasoning behind this is that mostly if you work with one or many IaC technologies, right, and that very much depends on the teams inside your company. So for example, the cloud engineers may use a totally different technology than your data team, which is just the fact given by nature, you end up basically starting to maintain relatively large platforms and code bases on a fragmented tooling, right? So what TerraMate does is it bundles all under one hood and it basically helps you to split up large code bases into isolated smaller stacks that then lower pipeline, a CI/CD pipeline runs. It helps you to automate things such as drift management, dependency management, etc. And so the point of infliction when you may want to use this is typically if your cloud or the amount of assets and resources managed with IaC hits a certain threshold. So the way that we look at it, and it varies a little bit based on how your organization operates in the cloud, but typically once you apply multi-account strategies, right, because then permission management becomes sort of a mess and rather challenging, or once you hit an IaC size, so the amount of resources or assets managed with IaC that causes pipelines to run longer than 10 to maybe 20 minutes.
Awesome. So I want to talk a bit about this transition from Mineros to TerraMate, because this is a storyline that we've heard from a few founders where they go out to build one company or one product. And as they're doing that, they see a bigger, different opportunity that they want to invest in. But it's hard from a headspace shift, because you kind of went out to build one thing and then you're giving up on that to go after the new thing in a lot of cases. Like, can you talk us through that kind of point in time and how you kind of made that decision and why you decided to shift your focus?
Yeah, sure. So I think for us, there were multiple points of infliction why we came up with that decision. So the nature of our previous business was more sort of a consultancy and implementation providers. We were doing pretty well. So focusing on AWS and Google Cloud, we're growing fast and winning multiple awards in that space and working with some of the best scale-ups, especially in the European ecosystem. But then as a bootstrap company in that space, you're either always under or overstaffed, which is challenging when it comes to growth, right? And then at the same time, the revenue is kind of not that defensible, right? Because mostly you sign service revenue that doesn't compound. And so for us, we just figured out that while this was a great business to learn, right, to hands-on learn what are the problems at a scale that we can solve, it just kind of naturally led us to the decision that maybe this is not what we want to do for the next 5 to 10 years. Plus, building such a company is relatively easy, especially in a bullish market, right? In a bullish market where there are a lot of investments and companies are just growing fast, facing lack of talent, there will always be space for, I think, decent and good service providers. So the transition really happened, yeah, more by coincidence, because we built TerraMate out of this consultancy to basically make our own teams more efficient, right? But the plan was never to turn this into an actual product. Until ThoughtWorks, they had like 15 employees or so on the same day starting the repository. And of course, we kind of, you know, looked at the metrics and KPIs of our open source traction. It was not the only thing that we did. We had more than 90 repositories open source. And so we kind of learned it early on, how to manage community and the open source development roadmaps, etc. However, when we realized that so many people of the same company start the repository the same day, we just reached out to them and realized they kind of, you know, follow the same paradigm and the same beliefs and approaches than we did. And that was the first aha moment for us when we, you know, kind of conclusion that this might be good thought leadership here and basically good way of, you know, transitioning from rather traditional 10 years old ISC towards a more modern approach. And things naturally just grow and we had more and more traction on TerraMate. And I think it was back in January this year or so, my co-founder and I went to dinner and we basically said, look, why don't we just look at this more from an, you know, monetary point of view? So we started building a model around it and then things went pretty fast. Basically, we raised a round in April, so just a couple of months later, which went quite well. And we took most of the team with us, not all of them, but most of them, which was challenging because it's a fundamentally different company. And yeah, basically started doing that. And this is where we are, I guess.
So how did you grow your initial community? Because I think you talk about companies found you, they start adopting you. There's so many Terraform open source projects out there, and some of them are quite nice. And I think your project definitely fits in like a great utility tool because it helps you able to orchestrate around your Terraform. So how did you start building your community in the first place? Like, did you post on Reddit? Did you had a certain meetup or community that you bootstrapped from? Like, what was the growth actually happen and what was the way you describe it that actually worked the best as well?
That's a good question. And of course, the initial traction didn't came out of random coincidence So what we did is basically we looked at well-known, let's call them, even though I don't like the name, influencers in that space. So people with a lot of reach that know that space inside out. And we basically kind of asked them for an opinion until folks started to tweet and, you know, post on LinkedIn, which gave us really the initial 200 stars or so, right? Which isn't much, by the way, but it was helpful and enough validation to stay motivated, I guess. So after that, what we basically did is we started to introduce the project on Hacker News and Reddit and the relevant medias of mostly users in the Terraform space. We did various measurements. I also ran an outbound campaign on LinkedIn, which failed hard, by the way, because typically the developers get spammed all day long by recruiters and then they, you know, tend to ignore you. But then in the mid to long term, right, and this is around a year ago, so TerraMate CLI as a project is 1 year, 4 months old. I guess what we did is we basically started writing content that focus it. So what is the problem that we're solving and what are those symptoms on how you can identify this problem? Based by guides and articles that describe the solutions and how to do this with TerraMate. And then things just, you know, grow naturally. Here and there, we had, you know, big person on Twitter or so retweeting us. Hacker News helped. And yeah, that's really it. So we made sure that there's enough attention coming from the market, but also in a strategized kind of way, if that makes sense.
So I'm curious about what you've learned about building alongside a community like Terraform. And this is common. Like, I have investments in companies that are building alongside the DBT community. And there's kind of pros and cons to it, because it's kind of a more specific group you're going after versus maybe folks that are across multiple communities. But then at the same time, you want to be independent of Terraform itself, but then you're still tied to it. So what have you learned about kind of that dynamic of building alongside a community that's already pretty deep and set and tied to another company?
I would say the relevant part of the existing Terraform community is just a fraction of the actual community, because the problems that we solve are problems that occur at a scale, right? And then most of the folks out there, they don't really handle infrastructure at a scale, or let's say they handle it at a scale, whereas plain Terraform may be sufficient enough for them, right? Or where they may just use one technology of choice, which is also, by the way, good. It's not necessarily good to have fragmented tooling, as we all know, I guess. The second biggest learning for us was that the user that is actually using TerraMate are not necessarily the same personas than the contributors, right? So for example, the way that TerraMate CLI goes, we call it open source, but it's really developed by us. We don't have that many community contributions. We have feature requests from the community and content requests and you know, people joining a Discord and asking us a bunch of questions, but those are not typically the same people that write and contribute code, because by nature, most of them are not software engineers, right? And it was kind of challenging for us, because the thing here is that if a user asks for a certain feature, sometimes they may describe it from a user standpoint, but then maybe they themselves have a wrong understanding on how the underlying technology works fundamentally. So that was something that we need to learn, I guess, the hard way. And then biggest learning after all is that if I look at cloud and platform engineers as a persona, compared to a market such as front-end or so, I'd say I mostly talk people early 30s, mid 40s or so, versus in front-end, you have a way wider and more enthusiastic audience, right? So our community, typically, we just figured out a lot more people use our stuff compared to people starring our stuff, which then in conversations, we ask them, could you please start a repository? So we get a little bit more visibility here. But the interactivity between the actual user and us was pretty low in the beginning, whereas now we're working on an incentive system and on systems where we actually track the usage of the product and people that signed up to our newsletter, start a repository and whatnot, in order to proactively engage with them. So I think this rule of engagement is pretty important to us, because most likely people only reach out if they have a problem, if they don't want to know something, not so much when they have actual suggestions or so, right? Only if they're in need, if that makes sense.
Yeah, super interesting. So I think this is a space where it's actually quite fascinating to really try to dig into, like, how do you see people really adopt you? Because when you're actually running on top of Terraform, I guess it's not like I have to run this, right? But it reduces the complexity for me to run this probably at scale. And do you see companies or people individually start to adopt it individually first? Like, I have a bunch of Terraform myself, I need to go and organize it on my own projects, and then I figure out for my company? Or this is typically more like a team decision? Because it sounds like this, I want everyone to be able to run Terraform and have better way to configure. And do you see your content or the way you describe to companies gears to what works better in terms of like a target audience way as well?
So in a sense of why and how do those users come to us, or companies come to us? Because most of them failed. Most of them failed at a certain stage of scale, right? And that's, I think, directly points to the previous question. So what is the symptoms that occur when rather plain greenfield ISC doesn't scale anymore? So quite often, we don't talk to companies that start applying Terraform or any other technology from scratch. And by the way, just to make sure, we do not build on top of Terraform. We orchestrate Terraform or any other tooling, right? I guess that's it is important in differentiator to competitive tooling in that space as well. We don't really care whether you're on Terraform or Kubernetes or CloudFormation or whatnot. However, as I said, almost every company or almost every user that comes to us has experienced issues and frustration with Terraform or whatever other technology they may use at some point, right? And then typically, it's sort of always the same story. They build around it and they try to resolve themselves until the pain gets that big that they basically look for a solution, right? So now every solution exists before. I think with kind of the second or third generation tooling that follows fundamentally different and maybe more innovative and disruptive approaches, although the competitor technologies are good as well and they did much good to the industry. I mean, I learned most of the things that we built by using those technologies. And then in the sense of landing and expanding in, you know, certain companies, so typically a subset of their team or a few people of the team engage with us and they run some sort of POC or they try to understand the fundamentals of TerraMate better before it gets eventually rolled out to more broad audience, aka engineers. The trend that we clearly see is that specific types of engineers are now using TerraMate to also, you know, kind of get started with Terraform. So typically the sort of core users are DevOps, cloud platform engineers. And then the more extended audience would be backend engineers, developers. What we haven't seen so much yet is frontend due to the nature that they usually don't mess around with infrastructure backing services. Yeah.
I want to talk a bit about kind of the first time that you kind of felt like, okay, we like figured out the right like early customer or user profile and we're able to land our first like notable user. Because I think this is one thing that's really, really hard for any early stage company, but especially a technical company, because there's just so much noise to figure out, okay, like we're going after users where they're having scale problems with Terraform. How do we find them? How do we get in front of them? How do we message to them? And what was kind of maybe one of the first that you remember, like breakthrough moments where you're like, okay, like this Hacker News post or this thing really drew those users in, and like what folks can learn from that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I guess the difference here to many other founders in that space is that we always sort of followed and go to market-centric approach. So while we were convinced that our technology is great, we, you know, also know that most likely what we think is great is wrong and is in the sense of other people's eyes or the messaging that we use. So what we did very early on is basically we came up with a positioning statement for TerraMate CLI, our open source tooling, right, that we adjusted on a monthly basis, right? And in that positioning statement, we basically define an audience, you know, who would be the hero, who would be the buyer inside of the company, the decision taker, yada, yada, what kind of problems and symptoms they face. And then eventually, if they don't resolve those, where this would lead to, in most cases, catastrophic failures, service degradation, and high employee churn or so. Talking a lot business here. Anyway, so what we basically did is before even investing too much in the product, we always had an MVP up and running and sort of a running product that our own, you know, customers back then in the consulting business used. We really focused on the messaging and we really focused on talking to a broad audience to understand, are those actual problems that, you know, many people have? Are those problems that we see just because we work with a limited range of customers due to the nature of being a consulting business, right? You don't have hundreds of customers. You have two, maybe four hands of customers at most. And I guess that was the main differentiation between, you know, other typical founder stories. And it helped us a lot to basically understand our user early on. So now we do the same for the commercial platform that we're building. And we have great help provided by one of our angels that basically kicks my every week by focusing on that together. Yeah. Hope that makes sense.
So actually, since you brought it up, I think probably one of the most interesting part of it is what commercial product do you even build around this? Because TerraMate, you know, it helps you use, you know, Terraform or other IAC tools much more effectively. But there's many, many directions you can take from here to actually build maybe more open source projects or more maybe other platform like features that targets different value props. How do you pick and choose what is the right commercial product to pursue here? And how do you find that synergy where TerraMate's users want to use your commercial products? Or how do you see that relationship?
So basically, the main concept in TerraMate CLI, our open source, are stacks, right? And stacks is really just an isolated unit that may contain a bunch of infrastructure code, whereas that could be Terraform, CloudFormation, and Kubernetes, whatnot, right? And stacks are useful because in a traditional sense, if you manage infrastructure as code, everything is managed in one stack. That means now if I add a bunch of resources in Terraform, for example, the amount of time that it takes in order to execute Terraform, because it always compares your actual Terraform code, your Terraform state with whatever is actually deployed in the cloud, takes as much time as those APIs take to respond, right? So let's say you have a network, Kubernetes cluster, whatnot. So now if I add a bunch of resources, they mostly run sequentially, it just takes longer, right? So now what the stacks do is you can basically split this up. And then if I introduce a change to the network, only the network will be considered by Terraform. Hence, the blast radius is lowered. CI/CD pipelines take less time to run, etc. So now we have this concept of stack, right? But it means instead of having this monolithic kind of code base, we actually have a highly fragmented code base, right? And it's pretty tough to keep an overview of that at a scale. So now what TerraMate Cloud will do is it takes all your stacks, push it into a dashboard, and you basically see, oh, I have 1,000 stacks and 500 of those are managed with Terraform, another 500 with Kubernetes or whatnot. And it shows you metadata on your stacks. What would be the last deployment? When did it happen? What's the status of the deployment? Do I have any drifts in my infrastructure? Drifts basically means that your infrastructure code does not represent the actual deployed resource anymore. A typical scenario here would be someone just logs into the cloud UI and changes something because your IAM permissions are messed up. People should not be able to do that, at least in production, etc. The second thing that we're building here is basically connecting existing cloud accounts. It would be Google Cloud Projects, AWS accounts, Azure subscriptions, or whatnot, in order to understand what part of my cloud footprint is basically managed with what ISC technology or at all versus isn't, right? And then we want to offer easy and convenient way to basically import and codify non-ISC managed assets to ISC, which is kind of the mid and long-term vision. And I guess the story here is that developers that use TerraMate early on in order to optimize the existing ISC setups, they will run into limitations at some point in the sense of keeping an overview, managing drifts, etc., which hopefully then ends up in, PLG kind of motion, sign up for the cloud. And we have different personas here. So again, the CLI is definitely used by the engineers themselves. The cloud version should be used by them, but then purchasing decisions mostly done by their managers or buyers, right? And depending on whether you talk to a free-tier kind of company, an enterprise that would be more account-based and top-down, the different motions. And we figured this out, to be honest. It's early, but so far, I think quite some validation was done. And the journey kind of makes sense. I always say half a team should go for free and a full team that receives enough value should pay. And you want to make sure that there's not too much friction between the open source and the commercial version, and you also provide enough, but not too much value on the open source side. And it's something that I see a lot of founders, especially in the open source core kind of space, struggling with, whereas it's something that we always considered early on in the first place, basically given that we had great advisors early on that helped us preventing the same or similar mistakes than they did, I guess.
Yeah, it's really interesting listening to your process around, okay, how does TerraMate Cloud fit into the user journey? Because I think that's just, it's really important to think about how it kind of interacts with your open source users. I want to dig into when you decided to start focusing on TerraMate Cloud, because we hear from so many founders on the podcast, a lot of them say that they wish they started working on their cloud version earlier. Some are just like, feeling like they put it out too soon and they wish they iterated with users more. Like, at what point were you like, okay, now is the time to like put some of my focus there?
Yeah, and that makes sense. So I think we invested sort of, and again, we're in a special situation because TerraMate was built in our previous company. So in fact, it wasn't just my co-founder and I working on this, but we had a whole team that we paid with the money that we made in our previous company in a bootstrap kind of manner. So yeah, we really started working on it a year ago. And then as the adoption of TerraMate increased, we basically realized that the value that we provide here is quite significant and folks kind of like it, right? And they asked for more and more features. So now when we were a year in or so, we decided to do the shift from, this consulting model towards being a hopefully soon hyper-growing kind of SaaS company in that space. we basically, in the first place, came up with a range of design partners that helped us validating our assumptions and hypotheses for TerraMate Cloud. So in fact, of course, we had an idea on what the product should, you know, be able to do and what sort of value to provide. But then it really changed a lot by talking to big accounts that were using TerraMate CLI, and some of them were super happy, and others on a many different scales said, look, this is great, but we resolved some problems. We just introduced a few more or different problems, and this is how we could solve them, right? This was kind of the point of inflection for us to shift the focus slightly on TerraMate Cloud. So right now, I'm not going to lie to you, sort of 70% of our efforts is on TerraMate Cloud, as we have quite some design partners lined up waiting for it. Big scale-ups basically out of Europe as well as the US ecosystem, where we got to deliver. And also for us, I think the next round will potentially need to raise or start raising end of the first quarter next year. So until then, we want to have enough validation. But you also want to make sure that your community grows at the same time, that adoption increase. I think, and I may be wrong here, but my assumption is that maybe 2% of our open source users will eventually convert and paying users, something like that, which is a number that I came up with just by talking to the community and by understanding for whom does it actually make sense. Of course, we don't want to sell to companies that don't need to use that, right? That don't have the issue. And if you manage an overseeable amount of infrastructure, you may not even need that. But then there's a subset of our users that are definitely in need. And so that's basically it.
Well, I think we should jump into more spicier discussions, I guess. So obviously the biggest discussions happening in Terraform is the license change, right? And I saw your blog post about the big license change discussions. There's probably a lot to unpack here. We're probably not going to explain the timeline, everything. But one is, since you really are branded around Terraform, just talk about like your post, like you explain it, it doesn't affect you. Talk about some of the details of how you see it affects your users or affects your collaboration with HashiCorp. And maybe also talk about like the new opportunities it might come from this as well.
And that's indeed one of the hottest topics right now. So what happened is, maybe for the context, HashiCorp changed the licensing model from an open source to a business closed source kind of license, right? Whereas they would limit the commercial usage of their products. And while this didn't come at a surprise for me personally, I was still coming at a shock, because when they announced it, I was basically just boarding a flight to LA, and I was like, oh, wow, didn't expect it to be that bad or to be that strict. So basically, you know, within the first days, there was a lot of fear in the industry, because HashiCorp didn't really make clear in the first place, you know, what implications would come with this license change. So I saw, you know, many, many organizations, companies, individuals in its space kind of being upset about it. Mostly because I believe there was a promise done in the past by the founders of HashiCorp that they would always remain open source. But then I also understand, if you lose significant revenue to competitors that build up on your technology, and if they market aggressively in the sense of we are cheaper and we are better, right? That may lead to the decision. And then meanwhile, HashiCorp is, of course, a significantly large company, and they're public, etc. So it didn't come as a surprise, but it still kind of made a buzz in the industry. So, however, what does it mean? For us, we heavily market around Terraform, but as we, again, that's what I've written in the blog post, neither host nor am Terraform, the implications for us are overseeable. I actually see positive impact for us, because for competitors that do am Terraform or host Terraform, they may be sweaty by now, right? Whereas us, we reached out to HashiCorp right away, and we were on their radar already, I guess, but we started talking to their partnership management and are now in the process of becoming a partner. And there's a great exchange of, you know, where do we draw the line? And how do we actually build a product that also, you know, provides value to your existing ecosystem, which would be beneficial, win-win for both sides, right? However, as an user of Terraform, speaking now, I was, of course, not happy to see that, right? And I think a CTO of an organization, will now certainly think about it twice, whether or not to apply and adopt the technology, taking into consideration that the move came out of nowhere. Plus, I think people that have been contributing to any of HashiCorp's product in the past, they probably feel quite misled. even though I gotta say, if you look at HashiCorp's repository retrospectively, they never really in the past couple of years allowed much community contribution anyways, right? They always kept control and they followed their own roadmap. So it wasn't really like the projects were entirely driven by open source. So now to sum this up, a nice side effect here is if you look at the space as a whole, it's overseeable, right? Especially in Terraform, let's say companies that build up on Terraform, they're a bunch of big companies. Mentioned a few, Spacelift, M0, Scalar, Gruntwerk. We basically sat on the table with all of those and discussed, so what does it actually mean and how would this affect us and how would this affect our users, our customers, and the community as a whole? And I think there was common consensus that Terraform should remain open source. So we came up with this organization or movement that previously was named OpenTF and yesterday renamed to OpenTofu as part of contributing it to the Linux and Cloud Native Compute Foundation to basically, you know, select a range of individuals and company pledging for Terraform remaining open source. So now HashiCorp hasn't really, you know, put out a statement on that, which for us basically means we will fork or we forked Terraform already and will continue developing it, yeah, in a community-driven way. Hopefully, you know, that will kind of provide folks in doubt with a safe way of continue using a feasible version of Terraform. Yeah,
I think for anybody building or working in open source, this is such a big moment because there's kind of this unspoken rule that once something is open source, generally, then it's going to remain that way. And it's kind of this promise to the community. When you think about the impact that this has on license decisions that companies, open source companies make going forward, and just folks that are building the space, like what kind of impact do you think this has? There's definitely some negative marketing, but then also some hope as far as how the community responded to it. But like when you think about the long-term impacts of what this has on open source generally and the perceptions of it, what do you think are the most meaningful ones?
Right. So I think for some time, the sentiment in open source was that this was not the first and this will not be the last event, right? What would be a comparable event? I think Elastic back in the days. That was kind of a similar move. Now HashiCorp being the big elephant in the room. So I think that people will be more skeptical towards applying or building on top of open source. Whereas I would say, okay, could be very use case specific. And I'm a big fan of open source, don't get me wrong. But I'm also, you know, I'm also a founder and I understand that you kind of need to defend your commercial value, right? So I'm sort of on both sides. As a user, I agree with the community. As a founder, I sort of agree with HashiCorp, right? It's just a natural move to do. Even though what I think now looking at this whole open tofu movement, they may have just planted the seed for their own disruption. Yeah. Hopefully not, because, I mean, HashiCorp, at least on my career, had a big influence. And I always loved what those guys were doing over the years. But yeah, I think there's a general mistrust in the industry right now. And people kind of trying to understand on how sustainable the whole open source ecosystem is, especially from a founder or investment perspective also. And I think there's a slight trend to be seen on the horizon in the mid to long term. We still need to figure this out, right? What has been constructive are the discussions around those topics on, you know, Hacker News and Reddit and whatnot. Whereas I just think, you know, as long as the air is heated up and people are, of course, being emotional because now the business that they build on a technology that they don't own is in danger, then as a founder, you would probably just need to ask yourself, is that clever in the first place or not, right? Or is it just a risk that I take into consideration?
Seeing probably HashiCorp, how it grew, you know, you definitely feel like they've done a lot of right things to make that community able to grow to the certain state. And then seeing it able to almost generate so much hate in a very quick time. Obviously, I think a lot of people are now talking about like, what could we have done differently? Or what could they have done differently? Is there any particular lessons you learned personally, like looking at this snafu, I suppose, that turns into tofu in this case? From a TerraMate perspective, you know, I'm speculating a little bit, but what would you think will be the best lessons you learned from this for running TerraMate in the near future or your future that you don't want to repeat? Yeah, we will just start from there.
That's a good question. And unfortunately, I don't have a glass ball to look into the future, even though I would love to have one. in a sense of HashiCorp, I think, you know, they've been so user and community centric until they become a publicly traded enterprise. And then if you look at the numbers that they released, and if I read this right, I may be wrong here, but if I read this right, is I think they hired an insanely big sales and marketing organization, whereas they failed to really scale up their revenue expansion probably. So the way that I look at it is, if you lose sense for your users and your customers, and you come from purely an entire marketing go-to-market sales kind of approach, the sentiment can shift quickly, right? And the decision to change the license, in my opinion, was a business decision, right? And it was probably not considered or underestimated how the community and the users that actually, you know, push and build trust and that they become, you know, your power users in order to promote your own products would impact. So again, I can't predict on the consequences this may have. I was surprised to see the community reacting so positive to OpenTF in the first place. Even for me personally, it felt like, okay, HashiCorp pulls off a defensive move. Now we pull off a defensive move and let's see where this ends. And it may not be smart, but then there was significant support by the community and all sorts of organizations jumping on that. And I think that HashiCorp may have underestimated the consequences, right? Even though I don't want to take either side here. That's important to mention. So for me, in the immediate short term, all that really matters are our users and our customers, right? And that the promise that we make now, we can still fulfill in 2-5 years or whatnot. And as a founder, for me, as well as a, you know, engineer, I think that's one of the most important aspects of building my business, right? That's what I do by the end of the day and what I love. And of course, I need to build a commercial, you know, organization that works well and earns money and hopefully satisfy everybody. But by the end of the day, the center of our focus is always user and customer, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think you highlight a really important point, which is what I think the HashiCorp license change highlighted for a lot of folks, is this friction between open source and commercial open source. And those directives aren't always aligned, and you're trying to build both at the same time. And it's a really delicate balance. On that note, I'd love to hear what advice, given where you're at on your journey, how far you are into your commercial journey, like what advice do you have for other commercial open source founders on how to make sure they can kind of balance the kind of delicate way of building a company with a free and like open source community, but also you have commercial initiatives and imperatives that you have to fulfill?
That's a good question. Whereas taking into consideration that we're relatively early, I would say I change my mind all the time as well. Yeah, just being absolutely honest here. But then I think what you want to do is you want to enable people and you want to make people successful, right? And typically the way that I look at it is land and expand. So if we look at a specific subset of our users that are basically, you know, heroes or people advocating, so evangelists, people advocating for TerraMate, I think it's important to kind of provide as much value as possible for those for free until they sort of, you know, adopt it in a more wide manner inside of their organization, where then at some point it's totally fine to charge money. And at some point it's also totally fine to draw a line between this is what you're able to do with the open source versus now there's an, you know, enterprise grade organization and we help you saving X amount of engineering hours, or we, you know, automate the churn for you or whatnot, right? Like all those nitty gritty things that especially engineers don't like to do. Right. I think this is where I would look at versus if you hide core functionality that is engineering centric or developer centric behind a paywall, you'll probably not make your users too happy. Right. So kind of trying to understand what's the value provided more on a team kind of layer, especially with respect to the buyer or manager or whoever signs off that budget, versus the engineers, I think, should be able to have the best experience possible at all times.
Awesome. Well, what is like a number one advice you give other founders, you know, that's going to be running into this, let's just call it DevOps or SRE open source product space? Is there one thing you always tell people, oh, wow, I expected coming in, you should definitely learn more about X, you know, before jumping in this space. What would that be?
My number one advice, and I'd actually like to split this up into two for other founders in that space, is to always make sure to consider, you know, the commercial side to go to market And while, you know, there are a lot of brilliant people out there that come up with amazing solutions, the way that they approach those or build those, the value they provide, maybe too much, too early, the commercial model is not in place. So I would consider this as early as possible. And the second advice is that, and that's one of the biggest lessons that I learned, is be very careful about whom to partner up with in a sense of investors, because I think there's a wide range of VCs interested in that space. But, and you guys know this, of course, because you're experts, just a little audience that actually understands the space well and can provide value. So for us, it's been, you know, so far Berlin-based funds Flying Cavalry, as well as a few really good angels, Chris Schagen, who helped, you know, scaling up Content Fuel is one of them. He helps us a lot with go-to-market. So get this advice in, surround yourself with the right people that help you preventing the mistakes that you will otherwise do, and that will just slow you down and cost you money and lower your chance to success, I guess. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, this has been a fantastic conversation and super timely. Thank you so much for joining us, Soren.
Thank you so much as well. Appreciate it.